y'all. Welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 485, I'm welcoming to the show my friend, Robin Pugh. In this episode, my friend Robin, who is an executive coach, author, founder of a leadership development firm, he is joining me to share his powerful testimony of a near-death experience in Africa while on a mission trip, and to share about his new book called The Reluctant Disciple that was 14 years in the making. We're going to talk a little bit about his process of getting this testimony out and his decision to not just write a memoir, but to make it a parable, which I think is a little different than most books that I covered. But it was through Robin's harrowing experience that the Lord really shifted his life to focus on how to bring God into the marketplace for those who may not be called into full-time vocational ministry. He's going to give us lots of tips for working or stay-at-home moms on how to be missional in all that we do. He reminds us of the Hebrew word Shema, which is to hear and obey the voice of the Lord. And so wherever you are, I hope that this is a good reminder that you are on mission today, right where you are. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Robin, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
So excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Heather.
Longtime friend.
Yes, absolutely. We go way back, which is so fun.
And I was thinking this morning, I was like, oh, the Robin Pugh of coaching my third son in soccer. Even though he was a year younger than your son, he ended up on the team, and you were the smartest coach. You would have Soccer Island. You probably, you know this. To y'all listening, if you're coaching little boys sports, get you a blanket and call it soccer, or call it whatever sport island.
Well, because we had this moving blanket, and when you've got these cats that you're trying to herd, I really don't even know where it came from, but all the kids wanted to be on Soccer Island. And so this 8x8 blanket, that was their place to be. So it just worked. That's so funny that you remember
that. I remember
that.
Soccer Island. And I remember every year your family creating an acronym.
We had a word for the year.
Okay.
Yep. And every year that word, we sort of knew that it was from God because the acronym came right behind it. And so that was always fun. That was our motto for the year.
And what was it this year? Because I think I wrote about yours in my Right Where You Belong book. I think you're in my book. Did I ever tell you that?
No, I don't know that I knew that. Look at me. I'm famous and I didn't even know
totally.
It.
Totally. So what's this year?
So this year, it's more of a phrase that came to me, which is let's go. And the very first time we ever did the word of the year, the word that came to me was go. And the acronym for go is that God opens. And so this was right when I launched my executive coaching practice, which has become the leadership development firm that I run to this day. And it was just kind of the sweetness of the Lord, because he knows I'm an analyzer and I like to have everything really figured out before I go. And he was just like, Robin, you need to go. And because he gave me the God opens piece of it, I was like, oh, my burden is light. He's going to open the doors that need to be opened. He'll keep the ones closed that need to be closed. So the circle of art that this year's phrase is let's go. So it's like, let's go, meaning God open. And it's really been great because there have been some challenges this year, but with that encouragement of that word or that phrase, it's been awesome.
And even though you've been in process of writing this book, let's go. Let's get it out there. It's out in the world now.
Yeah, it is. It's out in the wild. I had somebody text me a picture. They were sitting next to somebody on a plane and the person pulled the book out of their bag and they were like, oh my gosh, I have the same book. So it's out in the wild, which is so fun.
Surreal moments. Yeah. No. And you gathered all of us together and celebrate, which is so fun. Like, just to mark moments. And you've repeatedly said this was something God asked you to do and you were obedient and maybe, what's your phrase?
Yeah, so I get all this credit for being obedient because I talk about the fact that God called me to write it. The problem, Heather, is that he called me to write it 14 years ago. Yeah. So I talk about the fact that I've been semi-disobedient to what he's been calling me to do. And sweet friends have come alongside of me. And they're like, oh, you know, God's timing. And I'm like, you cannot chalk up your disobedience to God's timing. I mean, granted, he will redeem our quote unquote disobedience, but I've been living with the idea of this for 14 years, and he's been very, very patient with me, and now it's out, which is great.
Well, and I know I told you you're not going to talk about book writing, but I will say in my journey, mine was 10 years until my whole thing came around, and I kept saying, am I being disobedient? Am I being disobedient? Or is this the distraction? And my real obedience is to mothering these boys and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. And what I came around to was the message wasn't totally done. Like if I'd written a book those 10 years ago, bless the mom that read it. I mean, it would have been full of ideas with no practicality and no life lived. And I'm sure in 10 more years, I'll have a lot more thoughts. But what I think is cool about your book is that it was going to be a memoir, this telling of the story. And given that time of delayed obedience or whatever, it became a parable, which the world is full of, you know, fiction or nonfiction and memoirs, but to have a parable, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's for sure different. And what you're referencing is the original catalyst for the book was a missions trip that I was on in Kenya in 2007. And it went awry. And so the drama and the trauma of that was what was going to be this personal memoir, kind of sharing with the world what I learned through this near-death experience. And I was working with a book coach because while I had co-authored a business book before, I had not had a single or a solo authorship book. And so this great guy, Michael, this book coach, he said, well, what's the purpose of the book? Meaning, why are you going to write it? And I said, I really want to speak to people who were like me, the lukewarmers that were sitting in the pews at church, who were in the marketplace, not called to vocational ministry, going, is there more? And so I said, I want to be a catalyst for the single largest sitting army in the world, which is perhaps men aged 33 to 65 who are open to a walk with Christ and may even be believers, but don't know what to do with their marketplace position, you know, where God has otherwise planted them. And he said, well, let me get this straight. Your personal memoir means that you have to encourage people by telling them that they have to get fired from their job. They have to go on a missions trip to Kenya. They have to have a machete to their neck, a gun to their head, and almost die in a ditch. And that's what you expect to encourage them. And I was like, you know, there's no way, right? Like, it's like, if you've ever read Kisses from Katie, and she talks about being in Africa and she adopted these 50 children from Africa. Well, I can read that and be inspired, but I'm probably not going to do what she did. And so I looked at this guy, Michael, and I was like, okay, big shot, what's your idea? And he said, a fictional parable. And I said, oh, okay, great. Well, that will never happen because I don't know how to do that. And it's kind of to your point, like there's plenty of personal memoirs, but a fictional parable, what in the world?
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I feel like clapping, like to go out the gate with a parable is pretty impressive. And I love what you said in there, your mission of the book to inspire this army of believers who, like you said, are not in vocational ministry. It's not their full-time job to be going and spreading the gospel, but they're with people every day who are desperate to know the truth and the good news of Jesus. And there's this disconnect and this feeling of lack of purpose or just, I don't know about you, but in this season of mid-40s, it seems to me like the men I'm interacting with, they just are feeling a little lost. They're kind of seeing their careers are kind of on the, what do they call it, over the hill, right? And I would think your book would kind of inspire that this isn't the end. It's just, you're just getting started.
Well, and I think that the experience that you're describing, whether it's mid-40s to mid-50s, is happening a lot earlier because the millennials as well as the Gen Zers are filled with this desire for purpose. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that they ask future employers when they're interviewing is roughly, you know, well, what is the business about? What's the mission of the organization? So we get to thank Simon Sinek, who's built an empire out of us asking the question, why? Yeah. Well, millennials and Gen Zers are very adept at asking, why are we doing this? And what, you know, what is the purpose of the business? So I just think unlocking this purpose-driven life isn't reserved for, okay, I've made all this money in my career now, because Bob Buford, right, he has halftime. And it's like, oh, for, you know, the second half of your life, what are you going to do that's purpose-driven? Well, no, it's really for the entirety of our life, because we know that one day we may not wake up. And that could be at 37, that could be at 44. In our sweet church, just in the past 6 months, we've lost six people age 44 and under. And so while that is sad and we will mourn the loss of them and their future potential, it should be a huge wake-up call to every single one of us that every single day matters and God cares about the details and what you're doing today. And he's given you the influence that you have right where you are.
Right where you belong, yeah. I have been a big fan of Lands' End since my boys were little. I knew the products would be quality, that they would make me look more put together than I felt like on the inside, and that I would be ready for every life's journey, whether it was the bags with the cute embroidered names for their Mother's Day out drop off, or me with a bigger bag version with our family's last name embroidered that I would take to the pool. I was a big fan of the swim dress, or even the swimwear for my boys, that I could get matching swim shirts and swimsuits and they'd all look cute together. I knew that I would feel great chasing after them, that it would withstand the summer for my boys. I love all of their products, actually, as far as their versatility and their packability, and they're timeless, really, and they all kind of work together. So their collection of products is the perfect one suitcase solution no matter where you're going. I've also recently went on Lands' End and purchased a suit jacket for my youngest son, that's now part of their uniform. And I knew I could count on Lands' End quality to get those products. So seize the summer or whatever season you're in, and you will be ready in Lands' End. Head to landsend.com. Use the code DON'TMOMALONE, all caps, DON'TMOMALONE, to get 30% off your purchase. Head to landsend.com. Use that code DON'TMOMALONE to get 30% off of your purchase. Okay, so you kind of, a little nod to your story, but you did have a pretty dramatic story that not everybody can have, but can you tell us, I mean, you kind of told it a little bit, but is there more you want to share with us and the impact, like the before and after for you personally, outside of Peter in the book, the character in the book?
Yeah, so it's a very long story, and yet I think it's most powerful when I'm able to share it in a short form and then applicable to your audience who's listening, because it's otherwise a dramatic story and most people won't have a near-death experience, or at least I pray that they won't. Kenya missions trip, went with our church. So we belong to Highland Park Presbyterian Church in Dallas, Texas. And we were going with our all nations pastor. So we had a pretty significant African congregation, and we were going back to this village, Jathini, that is about 5 hours outside of out of Nairobi, at the base of Mount Kenya. And there were 13 of us. And the very first night that we were there, we were going into the bush to visit the village that we were going to be serving for the next 10 days with a water project and Crown Financial Ministries curriculum and some other VBS type things. And on the way out of the bush, our two vans were stopped by a rogue band of thugs. And we were held against our will, pulled out of the vans. And it was verbally brutal. And then it was physically brutal as well. Nobody was dragged into the bushes and nobody was killed, but they were wreaking havoc on us. And it's the worst physical treatment that I hope to ever experience. And yet I don't even like to talk about the mistreatment that we experience, because the bad guys beat the holy tar out of the Africans that were with us, both the expats from the United States as well as our hosts. And I don't know why. I don't know why they treated them more poorly than us. But to even say that I was mistreated would be an insult to them and the physicality that they experienced, all the while feeling very helpless, because every time we attempted to try and stop that or intervene, then we would get the same treatment. And so the whole goal was just to try and keep the energy level way down, because these guys were not thinking rationally. So at the very end, or what ended up becoming the end, probably about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, they did a weird sort of official police pat down, which was so kind compared to the way they had been treating us. And then they laid us face down in the ditch by the side of the road. You don't have to watch too many movies to know that the ditch is the last place. And there were some other factors that were going on that really hinted at the fact that this could end very poorly. And so, interestingly enough, just face ground into the red dirt of the ditch, I immediately thought of my grandmother, who had passed away 6 months earlier. And I was going to be at the pearly gates, and she would have greeted me by saying, "Welcome, but what are you doing here?" Because by all earthly accounts, you know, 50 years should separate our entry into heaven. And then I realized, oh my gosh, if 13 people are dead or dying in a ditch by the side of the road in otherwise peaceful Kenya at the time, the whole world was going to know about it. So the 24-hour media cycle would really shine a light, and perhaps that light, God would use it to eradicate this evil that was holding us. They had been lying in wait for us, and so that evil was really gripping that area, gripping that land. And then, Heather, it dawned on me, oh my gosh, the purpose of my life is going to be my death, because in my death, God will release this group of people from the evil that is gripping it. Now, that's a pretty hard truth to swallow, because I had been praying the entire time, save us, save us, save us, all the while trying to figure out how to manage this situation. But I just was like, okay, well, you're the master of the universe. And if this is your plan has got to be better than my plan, even though I'm really invested in my plan that you would save us. And so I said, in this ditch, God, tonight, I give you my life. And Heather, I can't even really describe it, but a transcendental peace came over me that I probably will never experience on earth again. And I just started reflexively saying the Lord's Prayer, maybe as kind of a last rites. And I got to deliver us from evil. And my buddy John came over me and said, we can go. And what had happened was a set of headlights was coming down the rutted out road, and it had spooked the bad guys away. And so we had only a minute or two to gather everybody up, put them into the two vans. This first van was disabled, pulled everybody out, shoving 13 people into a 6-person van. The headlights are catching up to us. And I'm the second to last person to get into the van. John's got his hand on my back, and the headlights pass us. I'm looking at the red brake lights of an all-white delivery van. Minutes earlier, deliver us from evil. And here, standing in the gap between us and the bad guys, is a delivery van.
Can't make it up.
Can't make it up. We had seen no cars going in, no cars coming out. There's no homes or addresses for anything to be delivered. It's 10:30-ish at night, and he sends a delivery van. So in my personal debrief, I'm thinking, okay, God, let me get this straight. The purpose of my life is my death, and you miraculously saved me. First of all, thank you. That's awesome. Appreciate that. Yes, gratitude. I love that. But what's the purpose of my life? And as near audible as probably possible, more of an impression of my heart, he said, Robin, I do not demand your life. Knowing that you would give it to me is all that I ask. Get up, dust yourself off, and let's get to work.
Let's go.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. Yeah, let's go. And so I started this leadership development firm. We take the wisdom of the Lord and we influence the influencers through the leadership development, because leaders cast a long shadow. And then as this side project of this book, taking us who knows where, but to places that only he will know over the next couple of years, I'm sure.
Whew. Everyone's taking a deep breath. I think what's interesting to me, though, is you saying your purpose is in your death, right? I get that God says, I'm not requiring that of you. But you know our dear friend Dee Dee, who is mm-hmm. in the end stages of cancer. She says she's never better grasped the concept of dying to self than through this end stage cancer process. And I'm kind of thinking, like, what if our purpose was death to self? Like, not your physical death, but like death to my will, death to my plans, death to my need for a purpose. Like, it kind of was your death that's your purpose.
So what's so fascinating about that angle, and just maybe we dedicate this whole episode to sweet Dee Dee, who's just done this process of her fatal, you know, terminal cancer, I mean, so well, such a model. And as I reflect on just the time that I've had since the ditch,
yeah,
is that I really died in the ditch that day. Mm-hmm. And I bring this message as a message of encouragement, which I think is probably the wisdom of not writing a personal memoir, because people would be, oh, really interesting. But if I have to go through that in order to die to self, I think I'm okay. And so the encouragement is, this isn't about East Africa or West Dallas or security, or, I mean, this is about every single person, and at any given moment is either going into a ditch, in a ditch, or coming out of a ditch metaphorically in their life. Yeah. God loves us so much, in my instance, that he would rip me from this job, an unceremonious firing, and place me in a ditch in Kenya to save me and get my full attention. So that I say to him, every single day that I have from this point forward is yours. And daily I'm wrestling with dying to the little pieces of self that are still hanging on, but I'm aware that what I have is gravy, is extra. Mm-hmm. And so I'm putting into service as best I can, because I don't want to be disobedient. And, you know, I like that word in the Greek, because obedience is shema, which just means to listen, as opposed to the American word, which is behave rightly.
Yes. Oh, we could talk a whole day about shema, Robin. Yeah. It's hear and obey, FYI. It's inseparable. You would hear Shema and it would be, I listen and obey. And they would never be like, I just heard it, but I didn't do it.
Yeah. Because if you hear a word from the Lord, why would you then not be compelled to go do it? Because chances are good, it's very counterintuitive to what you would otherwise want to do. And you're like, okay, well, I have a choice. Of course, fear, anxiety, nervousness, like all those fears that are not of the Lord get in the way from that piece that you're talking about, which is to listen and then do. But if there's no daylight between hearing him and doing whatever he's calling us to, I mean, how amazing is that?
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? The thing that you always do. Maybe it's a hot bath at the end of the day. Maybe it's you never skip leg day, which, man, good for you. Or maybe you never skip therapy day. I know for me, therapy was a huge part of my story, even how Don't Mom Alone came about. With 4 kids under the age of 7, I just got to the end of myself and I needed a little perspective and a little coaching through that season in my life. And maybe you're finding that your coping skills aren't getting you through. You're not the mom that you want to be, and you've been wanting to start therapy, but you didn't know how to fit it into your busy schedule. Well, one place to start is to give BetterHelp a try. What makes it great for moms? It's entirely online. So it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/DMA today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DMA. I want to address the moms in the room.
Okay.
Who are listening, who are like, now I know I have moms that listen, they're in the marketplace and they're, you know, feeling all the things. They're feeling a lot of things. They let me know. But I also have moms who are home full time. I think both feel that pull of like, is what I'm doing, does it matter? So what word could you give to her of this idea, this concept of the ditch analogy in her life when it's very full of doing and a lot of serving, but the service doesn't feel fruitful in the faith way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'll go with kind of the spirit of the question. So one thing is we are our spouse's helpmate. And so as if you happen to be a stay-at-home mom and you're sending your husband out into the marketplace, I'm giving you a real-time view as to what it feels like to wrestle with the purpose of the marketplace work. So as a Jonathan to the David, if we use that armor-bearer language, that is an incredible mission field for you as a wife to your spouse who might be in the marketplace. So that's just kind of one point that immediately comes to mind. The second point that comes to mind is we've got an identity crisis in the world right now because the culture is telling us what we should do, who we should be. Social media doesn't help. Television programs are portraying things out of God's design, and it can't help but seep in. And so all of a sudden, our belief, what we believe is true, is sort of a crooked stick compared to the straight stick of truth as offered in Scripture. So for all of your listeners, male, female, get into the word and really know what God's truth is and what he's commanding us to do. Okay. Well, that's sort of a Sunday school answer, like, oh, get into the word and, you know, pray to Jesus. But it's true because we've never had a greater onslaught of untruth coming at us. And if you're isolated, and this is the whole title, Don't Mom Alone, because God doesn't want us in isolation. And so break out of that isolation, get the true truth, and be in community. Here's an example. We've been invited into a community group, and these young couples are probably about 15 years younger. And Karen, my wife, and I are like, why are they inviting us to be in their community group?
They're smart.
And it, well, but we love them so much. In fact, we're having them to dinner on Friday, and we just want to treat them. And yet an interesting story came out of a conversation because we meet on Sundays. And one woman was really struggling with all of the carpool time. I mean, constant legs because they have however many kids, they've got so many, you know, drives, and she's on the road the entire time. Yep. And so, you know, half or greater of your audience is like, yes, yes, me, yes. Me. Well, we spent almost an entire community group session talking about what is your purpose? If God has given you that mission field in that moment, which is tiring and exhausting, what is God telling you about that circumstance? And what ended up materializing through the accountability of the group, but also just her listening to what God shared with her, that is her mission right now. So we've dubbed it mobile missions. So our text string is all about, how did the mobile missions go today? Well, now all of a sudden she's asking the kids, who do we need to pray for? And they're dropping cookies off at other people's house. So now all of a sudden there's this little mobile missionary group that is this mom and her kiddos. And so the mission of really discipling the kiddos, but then also that little band of people all throughout their drives, what are they doing? Who are they seeing? How are they supporting everybody? And it has completely changed and altered the way she thinks about her role.
Yeah.
and nothing by way of activity has changed. Mm-hmm. So God has given her a word about why he has her doing this, and she's now living out that purpose, even though the trips are the exact same as they were prior.
So good. I remember Sally Clarkson, who had done Crew or Campus Crusade when she was younger. Mm-hmm. She had that realization with her kids. And when I heard her say that, I was like, oh, there's my purpose. But I want to speak to any of the moms listening, and they reach out to me, whose husbands are the ones you're talking about, who have not embraced faith, who may be believers but are not active in their faith, not doing the Sunday school answer of reading God's word. Definitely reluctant disciples, and it can be frustrating as a wife. They are like, what do I do? Do I make my husband read the Bible? Do I make my husband lead our family devotions? Do I, like, you may be, as a female listening, totally inspired, be on mission in your home, with your family, with your neighborhood, with your workplace. Like, what do we do as women if our husbands aren't, or if you want to speak to the men? I don't think the This is speaking to the men right now. I really think we as women need to know what our role is in that.
Yeah. So the book is called The Reluctant Disciple because I needed to embody the way that I felt prior to the Kenya trip, which was, okay, yeah, I want to be on the field for God, but I'm in the marketplace and the pastor's telling me to go love on people. But how do I love on people when I have to swim with the sharks every day? Like, this is the conundrum. And so the language isn't the same, and therefore I don't know how to apply it. And so Peter, the disciple,
Peter in your book?
Both. Peter's the original reluctant disciple, right? Because he wants to believe, and then he has these bouts of doubt and questioning. So Peter Christensen, the main protagonist in the book, comes from the original reluctant disciple, Peter, which is why I like The Chosen, because it's such a great personification of the fact that these 12 disciples were real. And they just picked up a writing instrument and they just chronicled what they saw. So Heather, your life is the fifth gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Heather. So there's a reason to pick up the pen and share the testimony of our lives so as to encourage others, which is what you're asking me to do for the women that are listening. First of all, pray. Really be on your knees praying. I have no doubt that Karen was praying for me that I would be the spiritual head of the household that she felt like God was calling me to be. And it all sounds really good on this podcast right now, but there's a whole history where it doesn't sound so good. So I'm showing up as my best head of spiritual household.
I've seen moments with you, Robin. Don't you worry.
There you go.
Don't you worry. I've seen your moments. I've had my moments.
You got
pictures. We're all crashing into each other.
There you
go. It's fine.
So the point is that I think it has to start with prayer, because God's going to give that Jonathan in the David's life the instructions for how to speak and act, the discernment when to speak, when to not speak. So that's number one. The interesting part, and this is enter shameless plug for the book, I wrote the book for men because I'm thinking, oh, it's a male protagonist. It's my story. The most surprising thing that has happened is that the women are voraciously reading it.
This is not surprising to me.
And I'm like,
not surprising to me, but it wasn't your goal.
It wasn't the original sort of intent. And here's what they say back to me. Number one, there are two Good Samaritans that end up coming around Peter. So there's a three-part conversation where Mary and Jim, the disciples, are having these six conversations with Peter. And the women are saying back to me, I've never been in a discipleship conversation like the one that's in the book, The Reluctant Disciple. And so that is really helping them be asked the questions that they haven't been asked before, and also hear those play out in the conversation. The second piece is, you've given me an on-ramp, says the female leader, to now share my faith with other people in a way that isn't throwing a Bible at somebody. Because it's a fairly readable story that isn't slapping people in the face from a proselytizing standpoint. It just is really approachable. So I wrote it for men aged 33 to 65 who are really saying, isn't there more to life? And the women who love them. Mm-hmm. So it may start out on their bedside table, the wives, and then it will work its way over to the bedside table of the men, and let it just sit there. And there may be dust on it, but God has a plan for your husband, plans to prosper him, to not harm him. And the Holy Spirit is a gentleman, and he will just gently tap on the shoulder of that husband. And you, the wife, have to decide whether or not you believe in God's timing or you don't. Because dying to the control of the situation is your job, while God's job is to go get the heart of the head of the household. And he may cause him to be fired, and he may cause him to be in a ditch. And those people around him who love him will be there when those things happen.
Yeah, that's the terrifying part, right? Like, I don't want to be a part of the humbling, okay? Okay. But I think that I was really hoping you would say that about how people loved kind of observing the discipleship process, because that word gets thrown out so often. Oh, you got a disciple, and I'm a disciple, and they're disciple, la, 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 la. Disciple of generation. It's like, what the heck does that mean? What does it mean to do that? And so showing people through conversation. So give them a little nugget, like, What does that mean? What would a conversation example be that's in the book, maybe, or one that comes to your mind?
Yeah, so the first conversation that Mary and Jim have with Peter is whether or not he thinks that he's the smartest person to run his life, or God might be smarter than him as it relates to the plan for Peter's life. Well, I don't know that I'd ever been presented with it that way. The book sort of wrote itself, and it was like, hey, Peter, is God smarter than you, or are you smarter than God? And going back to the Sunday school answer, you have to defer to, oh, well, God is smarter, but we don't live our lives under that belief, because we crave control, whether it's control of our kids and their behavior or what they do, or control of our spouse or control of our circumstances. And if we just let go of our grip and come at it more open-handed, and we let God's plan prevail, well, number one, that's very scary because it's the opposite of what we have been doing for whatever number of years. But if God is smarter than us, then we get the opportunity to, in our brain, choose to submit to God's plan. That's the very first threshold issue that Jim and Mary address with Peter. And they have a little bit of a leg up on the conversation because Peter's ended up in a pretty bad way, given some of his own choices. And the evidence of whether or not his decision-making versus God's decision-making is better is pretty evident. And so they've got him in a good way. And so that would just be an example of one of those questions that plays itself out in the book.
What would you say to the person who is reluctant to pursue faith because they're seeing poor examples in male leaders in the church right now?
Yeah, I would say don't blame God for the poor decisions that we humans make when we misuse the free will, which is the amazing gift that God has otherwise given us.
That's good.
And if you're letting somebody else's poor decisions keep you from an amazing journey of submitting to God, and I like to say partnering with God, but let's be biblically correct and say submitting to the Lord's will. It's a journey that you couldn't even possibly fathom for yourself and for your family. And so why would you let somebody else's bad behavior keep you from that out of some weird twisted logic that, well, if God was all powerful, he wouldn't have let that person do that? And it's like, well, you're making bad decisions. Are you saying that God shouldn't let you make your own choices? Like, just play the logic out. And so we have too many examples of people in positions of authority that are making bad choices. And this is the whole point of the faith, which is that we can make those choices and God will never leave us. He will never leave us, but don't let that person's choices keep you from the intimacy of that relationship. A father who will never let you go. He's adopted you. Did you know that in the Jewish culture, you can disown a child, but if you adopt a child, you can never disown them?
Really?
We're the adopted children of God. And by law, according to the Hebrew faith, that cannot be disowned. Mm. So you're in, you're sealed in the spirit.
Inheriting great things too. He's got a lot of good things for us to inherit. Thank you, Robin. This has been so fruitful. I love this conversation, but I want to give you a chance. Like if there's anything that you were thinking, I really want to tell people in this podcast and you haven't gotten to, is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think the last thing that I would say is that this book really shouldn't exist in the sense that I had never even thought about writing a fictional parable. And a quote that I've been introduced to recently is, first it's impossible, then it's difficult, and then it's done. And so my message is, you've got something that God has put on your heart that you're really wrestling with. Do I do it? Do I not do it? And you may have been wrestling with it like I did for up to 15 years. If one person who listens to this podcast, as a result of the encouragement of the conversation that we've just had, takes a step forward to do something that they believe is impossible, that's amazing. Because it is the impossible things that God wants us to go do, because out of our own inability to do it, he shows up and therefore he gets the glory.
Yeah.
So first it's impossible, then it's really difficult, and then it's done. And so I didn't want to leave this planet without having written this book. And whether or not it's a book or some other project, almost every single person that's listening to this has got some sort of nagging or tugging or nudging from the Lord that is saying, please go do this. And when you take a step of faith and move out to go do that, the Lord will bless that for what his goal is that he wants to accomplish. And so that I want to put courage into the people that are listening to this. I want to encourage them. It's just an incredible journey, and he loves you so much, and he never demotes, he only promotes. And so that would be what I would want to share as my last remarks.
And I'm going to put in there, because I heard it, so I'm going to say it. It may not be a do, it may be a be. You're hearing yeah. God saying, and it's relational or it's personal, like he's asking you to be in a way. And so don't just put a column that's only project related. Like if God's prompting you in any way, follow that prompting.
It's so good, because we are human doings for sure. So yeah. I love that you're separating that out, because we don't want to get misinterpreted that we're talking about making a task list.
How are you going to be with your kids when you pick them up from the car? That was exactly what you said. It wasn't a new doing. It was a, man, the Lord's really prompting my heart on seeing my mission field, what's right in front of me, and how I show up, the get to's, to use a Pine Cove phrase, like, what do you get to do today? It's like, that was just a perspective shift, that you're walking with God in it. Take his hand. Let's go.
Let's go.
What does the LETS stand for?
Wait, there's no acronym for it. It was just sort of like, let's go. And God just
returned. Let's God open. Okay.
God opens.
Okay. I like it. Let's do that. All right, everybody. You heard it. Let's go. Okay, y'all. Thanks for joining me and Robin. And I wanted you to know that in the show notes, there's actually a list of things under Connect with Robin Pugh of ways you can support his Reluctant Disciple project. Whether you buy a book or two, write a review, post on social media, there's even a link to download discussion questions. If you want to get the book and discuss with your community group or a book club, this would be a great option. I am going to pray over us as we head into this new year that we would be disciples, making disciples. Lord, I love Robin's imagery that we're either headed in a pit, or coming out of a pit. And for wherever the person listening is in that analogy, I pray that their ears would be tuned to you, that they would hear what you're calling them to this upcoming school year, who in their life they can disciple, that they can share more of who you are with in a real tangible way, that we wouldn't wait for Sunday school type moments, but that we would just as we go along the way, bring up the truth of who you are and how you stabilize each of us in whatever situation we find ourselves, that you are the only source of peace. You are the only source of joy. You are the only source of life that we can find here on earth. And I pray that others would be drawn to you through this work that Robin has faithfully labored on and created. And I pray that we wouldn't be reluctant, that we would hear and obey. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for joining me, y'all. Next week, I have another new episode. It's been fun to get back into it, having new conversations. This time with a famous TikToker. And I guess she is a fellow alum of mine. We are both speech language pathologists, and we're going to talk about early speech language development. So make sure you are checking your podcast app or you're subscribed to the show, or even better, I would love to connect with you via email. You just go to olaheather.com, Ola with an H like Heather.com, and you sign up. And every Tuesday, I will send you a little email with a reminder about the episode, what I'm loving, even some dinner recipes that have been a big hit with my people, what I'm thinking about. Would love to connect with you that way. All right. See you next week. Adios. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter to be with us. God in us, moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.